This is the Brandt and Sherry podcast, sponsored by Metashare. For more info about the show or about Brandt's book, Unoffendable, check out BrantHanson.com.
Hey, I'm Brandt. Producer Sherry is here, too. They're doing that figure again. They always try to freak us out. Oh, this Labor Day, there's going to be 800 million cars on there. Like, what am I supposed to do about it, you guys?
I got somewhere to go.
Thanks, AAA. Like, oh, you're right. There are a lot of cars out here.
Or does anyone ever say, you know what, I'm not going. Forget the whole thing. AAA said, there's going to be 8 million. I can't do it. And just stay home?
Well, literally, is there a figure? You're like, oh, 95 million the last year. I'm okay with 91.
But 95, we're staying home, guys.
Yeah, I'm staying home. There's too many. 4 million too many cars out there. Man, I don't know how he did it. I read the Gospels and the Bible pretty much every night. I get into that habit. It's a good habit for me. And it's not because I'm like, you know, you better feel guilty if you don't read the Bible. It's more like, man, is there anybody that makes sense in the world? Oh, I know who does. And I'll read about him. So reading about Jesus last night, I was struck again by how in the world he put up with being so misunderstood. I mean, I can't stand being misunderstood. It really drives me crazy. Like I say it, somebody doesn't understand what I said. They think ill of me. This happened with Jesus in huge ways. Not only that, but people were accusing him of being after the stuff that they were really after. And as it turns out, he just wants a big platform so he can take over all the religion. Like, no, that's you, sir. You're the one who wants to do that. Oh, he's just after this. No, that's you. And yet he's patient with people. I don't have a choice. Again, because I see the way he behaved. I got to be patient even with people who misunderstand me. Boy, we love your calls here. You speak truth to us, and we appreciate that. It's 855-90-BRANT. You can leave a message however you want. And again, it cuts to the quick when you tell us what's on your heart.
It upsets me that Sherry does not appreciate the breaking animals news stories.
Uh-huh.
Because where else is a girl to get the important animal news other than Brandt? I just don't understand it.
Mm.
She's such a negative Nelly, too.
Negative Nelly.
Like the whole Sean Connery thing.
Yep.
She didn't think that Sean was real.
No, she didn't.
What is that about? She's always such a downer, Brandt.
I know. Thank you.
So you put this altar call music
on
so you can
play
that.
I want to thank you for your willingness to come forward and be so honest about the program. Hey, what's going on? My name is Brandt. Just hanging out with you. Not a whole lot going on. Just chilling. We have a breaking animal story has just been handed to me.
That paper is blank.
Here at the breaking animal news desk.
Nothing
and
on the paper.
I have this story. Maybe you saw this video. A hawk picks up a snake, flies over a family
mm-hmm.
that's having a barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
The hawk drops the snake into the family barbecue.
Oh, that's terrifying.
And people are like, what kind of hawk? See what birds will do?
Mm-hmm.
The snake is terrified. I'll tell you who's terrified of this. A snake. He didn't bite anybody. Wasn't doing anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing he knows, he's flying in the air. He's not used to that. He's being dropped on a family that's having a barbecue.
Well, I'll tell you what. Things turned out better for that snake being dropped than had the hawk not dropped it. Because we do know what the motive was to pick the snake up, right?
Hawks need to eat, but that's just it. That's my point.
That's your point?
That is my point. A hawk is not going to do that on purpose. Like,
okay.
Oh, let me just give up my dinner just so I can freak out this family.
Okay.
That's not how they think.
Yeah,
and frankly, the thought that people have of look at that hawk is really, that's really something.
And this
is
our breaking animal news.
The hawk's motives is just wrong. This is, it's news plus opinion.
It's an op-ed.
This has been a news opinion update. We were talking about being misunderstood a little earlier on in the show. And why would you ever be thankful that you're misunderstood? I mean, you never would, right? Man, that'd be crazy. Why would I be glad about that? This is going to, again, sound crazy. But we're actually told, like in scripture, be thankful in all circumstances. Like all circumstances. And so as somebody who struggles with being misunderstood, I'm guessing here's where I could be thankful. I had to think about it. I'm guessing I could be thankful because it gives me an opportunity to forgive people. That's it. And that sounds kind of, I don't know, out there or something. But
no, that's good.
Okay, that's, again, Jesus was misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I don't think I understand him correctly. And yet he forgives me. So here's my chance. I get to extend that to other people. It drives me crazy, but it's still true. I gotta forgive him. So what did this guy tweet about marriage?
It says, happiness is not the goal of marriage, but one of the benefits. That's the quote. And not being married myself, I came to you to say, is that true? Or do you have you found that to be true?
I didn't think about that, but I would say yeah.
Okay.
In fact, if I come into marriage thinking, okay, this better make me happy.
Well, don't you think most people do?
I do.
Okay, and you think that's a mistake?
Yeah, all right. Most people get married and never know what marriage is for. Mm-hmm. Ever. People talk about marriage in the public square. I mean, just there's all sorts of debates on what's it for?
Mm-hmm.
What's the point? Mm-hmm. So I have found, and I bet you have too, I don't know, I'm actually happiest when I'm serving somebody. Mm. So that would be an offshoot of me serving my wife, that our marriage would be happy, and her for me too. And if we're both looking out for each other, that we're in serious trouble. Yeah, question for you to kick around with friends. We're asking you, now think about this, if an alien gave you an awesome opportunity, you could have one or the other. You could either go back and fix all your mistakes in your past or accept a gift of $10 million tax-free. Which would you take? The opportunity to fix your mistakes, or would you take the money?
I would fix my mistakes, absolutely.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Man, I'd take the cash and be like, well, you know, everybody messes up.
I hope everybody's okay.
What do you do?
Oh, $10 million tax-free. I'll take that.
Yeah, good. That's yeah. Right.
Hey, they're already done, you know?
That's how I feel.
Not to think that hard.
I think if there was one big, like, whoops, I accidentally blew up the nuclear plant thing.
Right, then you're like, I could go back and fix that.
I'd like to do that.
Right.
Whoops, I blew the whole nuclear plant.
I exposed the core of the uranium at the plant. I shouldn't have done that.
And in hindsight.
Yeah, in retrospect, wish I could get that one back.
This gets a little ethical.
Yeah.
I'd like to think I've learned from a lot of my mistakes and grown up from them. And that I wouldn't be the same if I'd made different choices. But I've also hurt a lot of people along the way and had some fallout from choices.
But
that's a lot of money.
Through it. Mm-hmm. Let her work through it. Mm-hmm.
Is it a shallow choice to choose the money?
Doesn't matter. It's what you want to do.
Right.
And tell me the dollar amount again.
$10 million.
Tax-free.
$10 million. Yes, I'm gonna say that I've learned too much from my mistakes. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna take the money.
I see how you're protecting yourself ethically there.
Take the money and look good.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Good
well
spin.
Done.
You
nice
like that?
Work. Question on Twitter asking me, hey Brant, how can we get tickets for your TED Talk?
Oh, yeah.
That's real nice to ask, and it's sold out, not because of me, it just is.
I didn't even get tickets.
I got one ticket.
Okay.
For my wife,
mm-hmm.
And that's it. So.
Sure, you didn't get other ones and eBay them?
Okay, I'm going to scalp them out front. But no,
well, I'll meet you out there.
I've got some other questions from people that are kind of like, well, you're talking about forgiveness at a TED Talk, but you're coming at it from, you know, you're a believer in Jesus. This mm-hmm. is part of your faith.
Yeah.
How does that apply to other people? I'm like, you'd be surprised. When I wrote this book, Unoffendable, I had a friend who's an atheist read it. And he had the same reaction a lot of people who aren't believers do, which is they're attracted to this forgiveness thing. Mm-hmm. And it kind of makes sense. I mean, if you really, on one hand, Jesus is counterintuitive because it's all about putting other people before yourself. Mm-hmm. But people, they're really yearning for us to mean what we say. And when they actually see that put into practice, they're intrigued. Or just the idea, like, I think deep down, let me put it this way. I think deep down, people who say they're non-believers are hoping we're true. They're hoping this story is true that we're telling about Jesus deep down. And they're hoping that somebody will show them that it is and demonstrate it. So to the extent that I'm a hypocrite, I kind of betray that. And to the extent that we live this out, there's something really that draws people in. And I can come at it from a Christian perspective and people are okay with it. As a general rule, they really are. Is there life in other space? That's a great question. I like talking about this kind of stuff. Yesterday we mentioned how the SETI program has heard, they heard some kind of radio signal. Mm-hmm. They picked it up. They think maybe something going on from outer space. Well, the latest on this is the Russian SETI program, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Mm-hmm. Am I losing you on this?
Yeah, I'm gone.
Okay.
I'm gone.
That fast?
Sorry, I'm
That's really
sorry.
Interesting.
Yeah. That I'm trying.
No, I know I bore people, but I'm always interested in at what point. It looked like it was about 5 seconds since you were.
No, it was. I was looking at it. It was about 22.
Well, oh, really? About 22 seconds?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good to know. It really is. I'm interested in that. Big movie weekend this weekend. Of course, Labor Day. You know what they're doing? They're trotting Finding Dory out again. I think it's really interesting.
Well, I guess sometimes if you don't have any blockbusters in the can, they say, like some things you can, new stuff, you're like, okay, well, let's bring the old thing back.
Yeah, I guess they are.
I heard it was good. I didn't see it.
Yep, I heard it was good too. So a question for you, we were just wondering about this, like how you would answer this. What's the saddest movie scene you ever saw? I mean, one that just sticks with you for a long time.
Okay.
Besides Old Yeller. Nobody talk about that. I don't want to hear about it.
You'll break down.
Still, why did they keep showing us that in grade school? When I was a kid, they kept showing us this show called Old Yeller. Did you ever see it?
I did not see it, no. I heard that it's pretty sad, and I can see you tearing up.
They kept doing it to us. Anyway, what would you say?
There's probably more sad moments in cinematic history, but the first one my mind always goes to is Click with Adam Sandler and the scene where... he's trying to go back to the last time he sees his dad, because he kind of like fast forwarded through his life, and his father had passed away, and he goes back to the final time he sees him, and he kind of like brushes him off, and kind of like treats him like a complete jerk, and he kind of like, and then the dad says, "I love you, son," and then he tries, pauses it and rewinds it and has him say that like 3 or 4 times, and that part just got me bawling in a public movie theater. That was very embarrassing because I had no idea it was coming. But that part always gets to me. And I just wanted to hug my dad really hard after that and tell him I love him.
What about you? What's the saddest movie scene you can remember?
For me?
Yeah.
A movie called Imitation of Life. And it's a girl, she's African-American, but she's very, very light. She can pass for white. It's based in like the 30s or 40s. And her mother is a dark-skinned woman and is a maid. And when she leaves, she decides she doesn't want anything to do with her mom. And her mom passes away, and she comes back. I can't even get through it.
That's terrible.
She comes back for the funeral, and she's running through the crowd. Oh, goodness. And Mahalia Jackson is singing gospel. I can't do it, Brent.
Well, just forget everything, man.
It's sad. It's an old movie, but it is so sad. Wow.
Any movie has a maid in it? I know it's going to be profound.
It's good.
It really is.
That's so true, actually.
It doesn't matter where it's set, who it is, something.
Oh, my goodness.
Jetsons, all those shows. What would you say, like, saddest movie moment of all time?
It's the one that sticks out in my mind the most is when I was a teenager in high school when Armageddon came out. And I remember sitting in the theater watching it, and the entire row was shaking from people sobbing when Bruce Willis decides to stay and sacrifice himself on the meteor or whatever space body that is.
Whatever.
I mean, it was just the entire theater is sobbing,
really?
And our chairs were vibrating from everyone crying. That's a very stark memory.
I haven't seen that movie. I didn't know there was a big.
Really? There is, yeah. And I know exactly
moment.
What one that you're talking about.
I would just go into a show called Armageddon, kind of expecting something bad to happen. One reason that Sherry likes MediShare, I mean, there's many, but one was, like, the big one.
You know who you're helping. You know where your money is going. It creates a community. I mean, in traditional healthcare, you pay, whatever you do every month. And, where in the world is that going?
No idea.
No, it's just up in the air and you don't know. But here, it's like, okay, this is helping this person or that person.
You get to know their situation, right?
You do, and you get to pray for them, and you just have... For me, it's a greater accountability of, okay, this is where this chunk of money is going to help this person. It really, I mean, the website is biblicalhealthcare.com. That's because this is a very biblical model, in my opinion.
If you're interested, go to biblicalhealthcare.com, and there's a video on there. It's real quick. And thanks, by the way, for considering it. You might wind up saving tons. Welcome to a special behind the scenes podcast only.
Is that what this is?
Feature. Yeah.
Okay.
Where we take you behind the scenes.
As the name suggests.
Yeah. It's beautiful back here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is stuff that won't go on the air.
Right.
Because we just thought we would just talk to podcast listener you. And we like you. So thanks for being here. And basically what happened was Sherry was like, look, I want to talk about my play.
Oh my goodness. Don't do that.
I want airtime for my play. Excuse me. Turn her down. And so I was like, we can't just go on and on and on about your play.
This is so terrible.
But
this is, you really did turn my mic down. That's ridiculous.
I did. Yeah. So, no, seriously, just to catch you up on some stuff, if you care, if you don't, you know, no problem. But stuff that we're up to in life behind the radio. The thing is about being on the radio, too, is when we talk, we're drilled, and with good reason, don't talk about yourself all the time,
mm-hmm.
and that's good, mm-hmm. and we don't want to anyway, but this gives us a chance, in case you're interested, to tell you what we're doing. Sherry's working on this big play. It's in Pittsburgh, and it's with a bunch of talented friends, and it's about racial unity or lack thereof in the church. With what would you say the overall upshot is of it?
I think the upshot, I hope the upshot anyway, is that if you decide to be intentional about cross-cultural relationships, that will be a very, very messy process, but worth it because of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that's the upshot.
Yeah. And the goal, too, is to have an audience that's there that
it's cross-cultural, and that's been my, if there's any level of stress, that's where it's been because, and the promoter who's doing it is a wonderful, wonderful man who believes in me, and I appreciate that, but he doesn't see the necessity of reaching out to everyone as I do.
Huh.
And not only does he not, I won't say he doesn't see the necessity, he doesn't believe that it'll work. So,
there's a good guy to partner with.
No, I mean, an older black guy who's been in the church all his life, for me to tell him I need to go on stations that target predominantly white faith-based listeners, in his world, those things don't cross, which is, in my point of view, that's the point
that's
of the play.
Problem. Yeah,
that's the issue.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I'm from Pittsburgh. My career was there majority of my career was there. So it's not necessarily a problem to get 1,300 black people in a auditorium and do a play. I just feel like if you're going to do it about this, then put up or shut up. Go out there and make sure that there's a mixed audience, because where do we see a mixed audience anyway, faith-based? I mean, if you're at a Fred Hammond concert, it's all black people there. Uh-huh. If you had a Casting Crowns, it's all white people there. So it really doesn't even happen for faith-based events. So I think that's where if there's a level of stress, that's where it's at, is trying to, make that happen and not want to, if I'm honest, it's a pride thing too, because I don't want to put all my resources on that and that not pay off and mm-hmm. him be able to say, see, I told mm-hmm. you it doesn't work. So we'll see.
Well, I'm coming, and I'm bringing my white self.
Okay, all right, and your wife?
And my white wife.
There's two! That's what I'll tell them. You see out there?
Yeah.
There's two.
You just want us because of our color.
That's right.
Just to make you feel multicultural.
Yeah. How does the tokenism feel?
Uh-huh. I like it. I think it feels awesome. So that's one thing that's going on. People can still get tickets if you're interested. It's in Pittsburgh now. In case you're like, well, is this just amateur hour? It's not. It is and it's not. Like, these are amateurs who are just as good as professionals. In some cases, professionals. Like, Ruben Studdard is in this.
He is, yeah.
And other guy that was in American Idol.
Yeah, Adam Brock. He's a great guy.
Yeah, just ridiculous talented people. Like, unbelievable cast. And it's a play written by Sherry, directed by Sherry. The whole thing's produced by Sherry. It's going to be great. And if people want to get tickets, they're expensive, right?
They're a little pricey, yeah.
How much are they?
41
okay.
and 46.
I point this out. I think it's well worth it, but it's almost sold out.
It is,
and
yeah.
And it's a 1,200 seat. So that in case people are thinking, okay, you're doing something with Sherry's Garage. That's cute.
Which
this is
I have
a legit
done.
Major production that's going on.
Yeah, it is. So. And it just grows and grows and grows. When I first said I was going to do it, you said to me, rightfully so, the best way to do this is to keep it low key.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if it's my personality or who I'm just seeing.
Failed at that. Utter failure.
I seem incapable of just doing something low-key. So anyway.
So that's one thing that's happening. Another thing, and this is touchy for us to talk about, and I didn't even tell Sherry we was going to talk about this, but we had something happen that we haven't, I think we've had happen yet, and that is we got dropped from a radio station.
Yeah,
I think
that's all right.
We're on all these affiliates. Now, please understand, it not only doesn't hurt our feelings, it doesn't, like, this isn't my living, so it doesn't cost either one of us a dime, okay? So there's no sour grapes going on. What happened, though, is conscientious on their part. They decided that they want to talk about Jesus in a certain way, and it's not the way we're doing it. Mm-hmm. Like, they have a way they want to appeal to the culture, and I think it'd be safe to say we are really direct.
Yeah.
And that they kind of like, hey, let's not go that way.
Yeah.
Maybe we could sideways a little bit. I mean, just be kind of positive, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In turn, like, agree to disagree.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, though, I don't think, I will say this, if somebody's been around radio for a while, somebody's been communicating with people who are not believers for a long time in different ways, I don't think that's the way to engage mainstream culture. The more of a generic positivity. And I'm not mentioning the radio station for a reason. Because I respect them, totally respect them, and wish them the absolute best. People really appreciate directness.
Yeah, anything else seems a little sneaky.
Yeah, they're real used to being sold something.
Right.
And I picked this up again, just reading this book about Christopher Hitchens, this leading atheist. He was just disgusted with Christians, disgusted, until he engaged a couple of true believers. He was so used to people not really meaning it,
mm-hmm.
and trying to kind of sideways, mm-hmm. let's just be this. And he didn't get, like, well, either this is true or not. If it is, it's all consuming.
Right.
Why not be honest with me and upfront with really what's going on? This is revolutionary news that should shake the foundations of the earth. Why in the world would you just not come out and say it?
And so then the implication would be that maybe you don't really believe it.
I think that's the way some people can take it. Now, okay. I know better in terms of the intent of people who take this approach.
Right.
I get it. I know churches who do that, and they're like, well, we don't want to come out and say, you know, let's not have the cross up. Let's not. Okay, got it.
Mm-hmm.
I can respectfully disagree because, again, I think sometimes there's this crowd of people we think we're reaching. And in fact, Jesus said if you raise him up, he'll draw people. And I think it's still true. So we do want to be direct about it. The interesting thing is I have a lot of friends who will read Unoffendable, or they'll listen to the radio show, or they'll listen to the podcast, who are not necessarily Christian, or even they would say they don't get it at all, but they get this. And they respect
it. I do too. College friends, high school friends, and never once have I heard anyone say, you guys talk too much about Jesus.
No,
I've never heard that.
That's just it. So there's like this disconnect, I think, sometimes between what Christians who are kind of cloistered, what we can think people want to hear, like, oh, don't come out and say it. Remember Penn Jillette from Penn and Teller?
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Saying, dude,
that.
Tell me. My goodness. So he's this ardent atheist, but he's like, if you believe this, then be honest with me. Like, are you a true believer or not? And why not in the public square say exactly what we think if we think it's redemptive? So I just want to say, if that's an approach you're interested in taking in media, like, well, I'm a Christian, but I don't want to really say it. I think people will respect you more if you do. And as long as you respect them.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you love them and you're honest about your own foibles and insecurities and whatnot, you're not presenting yourself as this morally evolved creature, self-righteously, like, then I think they will have respect for it. And my goodness, they'll be all ears. That's been I see this all the time.
Well, do you think that that's it? Do you think that we have bought into the world's caricature version of us? And in our attempt not to be that, we've overshot it, and now we're actually nothing. We're not making any kind of statement. You think that's it?
I think so, based on, like, my neighbors. I just know what my neighbors need.
Okay.
They don't need me to take a long time of just kind of dropping this hint or that.
Right.
Hey, it's all, you know, man, right on. Let's just be positive.
Mm-hmm.
They need me to be who I actually am.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the other thing. If God's not at work in non-Christians' lives, I know that there's two negatives in there, but I mean it. If God is not at work in the life of a non-Christian, then maybe that approach is okay.
Okay.
Okay, but if you believe that God is actually at work in people's lives and that they have a yearning and an appetite for him and he's already at work in a lot of people in different ways, then all I have to do is just be faithful about who God is in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
For that, because ultimately he's the one that's doing this. So I see it with my neighbors. I see it with other people. They have these appetites. It comes out in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somebody might be really like into gambling,
mm-hmm.
but I know where that yearning is coming from for needing significance, needing risk, needing meaning, needing all these. I know that's a yearning for God and that he's at work in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Why I don't need to not say it. I think they want him. And so all that to say, agree to disagree, totally respect it. But I would love for somebody to try different radio formats where they're even more upfront about Jesus,
mm-hmm.
more upfront about truth, and not feeling like we need to water this down so that people will accept it.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are tired of hiding. Just say it. People will be drawn to him, I think.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. The Brad and Sherry podcast is sponsored by MediShare. To find out more about MediShare, call 855-772-5699.